Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
We talk about safety net a lot on our team where I say, hey, listen, I'm your safety net. Or we have another leader, hey, I'm your safety net. And the aspect that it's okay if things don't go perfect, learn from this. I always say it, I think it's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission sometimes, specifically because you can learn from making a mistake if you have that safety net there. And the worst thing ever is to say, why didn't you do something? The best thing I think is to be able to say, hey, next time, let's try something different. Let's do it this way and learn from that mistake. So allowing people to make mistakes and knowing when you can make mistakes is super important.
What if the very habits that make you successful are the same ones keeping you stuck? Today's guest, Eric Schengel, learned that the hard way. He was running a tight ship. Every HR process ran through him. Nothing got missed. Everything looked perfect on paper. But years later, he realized something brutal. He had built a system that worked because of him, not without him. And that perfection, it came at the cost of his own growth. In this episode, Eric takes a minute to look back on the moment he realized that his obsession with getting everything right was actually holding him back and burning him out. We talk about why perfection is a sneaky career killer, how overfunctioning quietly ruins team development, and why your future self might just want you to let go a little. Let's dive in. Eric Schengel leads people and culture at Pine Gate Renewables, where he is focused on creating an environment where people can do their greatest work. His team spans HR, talent acquisition, learning and development, total rewards, and engagement, all aligned around one purpose: building a culture of collective accountability and high performance. With 25 years of experience across tech, science, hospitality, and government, Eric has helped fast-scaling companies like Plaid, Appen, and Enjoy grow with intention. His leadership roots run deep, from guiding startups through hypergrowth to serving as a naval officer where he learned to lead teams through uncertainty with clarity and care. Eric holds an MBA from the Naval Postgraduate School, a Master's of Arts in Human Relations, and a BS in Ocean Engineering from the U.S. Naval Academy. He now calls Asheville his home and brings the same commitment to his local community as he does his teams. In this episode of Transformation Unfiltered, Eric shares what it's like to build resilient cultures, lead through complexity, and stay grounded in what actually matters most.
Welcome, Eric. So glad you're here with us today. Let's just get right into it. I know you've been working at this for a long time and you have gathered some lessons along the way. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what is one of those big moments in your career that really stood out to you as a moment that allowed you to fast forward into the future? Maybe one of those moments that was a mistake or a challenge.
Lots of mistakes, lots of challenges. I think the one thing that stands out the most was this was one of my first or early times in a true HR leadership role. I was working in hotels in San Francisco as a director of human resources. And at the time, we had 5 labor unions. We had multiple employees in multiple departments. And my background as a naval officer set me up for my career in HR. And I felt that I had to do everything. And I felt that I had to make sure that every T was crossed, I was dotted. And it really created bottlenecks for me. On one hand, everything was running like clockwork from an HR perspective, from a performance perspective, but I was the single point of failure. And I really was proud of the work I was doing, but I also couldn't understand why I was not able to move things forward. Things were at a static point. And for my career as well, when it came to performance reviews, when it came to any employee discipline, benefits, everything, I was in every conversation, I was doing everything. And again, things were working great, but I didn't recognize at what cost and that was actually having in my career and actually in the rest of the company's performance as well and the development of the management team.
Wow. So I love that you got great training through the Navy to come into the HR role. And I just want to back up and understand a little bit more about what it would have been like if I was on your team during that time. So you came in, you're working in not the Navy anymore, in a hotel, but do it all and do it well, I think, manager. What was it like for the folks that worked with you?
I think that on one hand, there was a feeling of trust and happiness that they knew things would be taken care of, that they had a partner. But I was looking at the role much more transactionally as opposed from being more of a partner and in more of a transformative role. And I think that is that's the key lesson learned is I viewed human resources as transactions.
Interesting.
And I think in the Navy and as more of a manager role, you are, it is very transactional. And as you move into that next level, it's more than just being transactional. So I think if you were a member of the team, whether it be an employee or a manager or a leader, you knew things were going to get done. Go talk to Eric. But what was happening is that I wasn't developing and allowing the team, the leaders, the managers to grow in their career. Wow. And I was the one-stop shopping, which was great. I was like, why am I not progressing? Why am I not moving forward? And it was because I was purely transactional and wasn't providing thought leadership along with just the transactional piece of human resources.
I think that's a really good insight about the differences. Retake. I think that's really interesting about the differences between being transactional and being strategic. And I'm going to do the mean host thing and pull you back into the moment that you don't want to be in anymore because you've grown past it. But take me back there. What was it like for you? Because transactional leaders, that itch was there because it was successful for you, I bet, in some place in your life. What was it like to be transactional? What would I see?
Well, a couple things. I think even going, answering a question you didn't ask is transactions for strategic. I think there's a big misunderstanding about what it means to be strategic, especially in human resources. And I think there are sometimes at talking to junior HR professionals or even emerging HR professionals, the question is, I want to be more strategic in my career because there's a belief that it's easier or you're just sitting around and making decisions as opposed to actually doing the work. And I think that's a big fallacy. The work still needs to get done, but it's how you do the work and the tools that you use and the resources to accomplish the work is really the difference between being transactional and strategic. So going back to that point in my life, my experience had been in the military. My experience was very much get the job done. And it was very top down in the approach to that. So not that I was top down in my approach to human resources, but I implemented processes and tools that were binary. It was this way or no way. And as much as that worked for me, and it made sure that we were compliant and made sure that everything was moving along, it wasn't allowing people to transform. It wasn't allowing iterative conversations. It wasn't allowing alternative ways to achieve the same goal or to accomplish the same work. And I wasn't realizing that. And looking back, I'm like, I can't believe that's so basic. But the more and more I've grown in my career, I've seen that I wasn't alone. I'm not alone in that. A lot of times we think it's all about just getting the job done, but you don't think about what are the ripples and the wakes that you leave behind when doing so. So I think it's really at that time, I was focused on the job, the what, as opposed to the how. I think the how is it's equally as important because it can actually find alternative ways to do the what.
There were such good nuggets in there. One, this whole idea of a binary process or choice. It's either follow path A or follow path B. And what I'm hearing from you is that is a limiting construct.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me more about how that binary this or that was limiting to you and your team members back in the day.
I mean, I think that, for example, if the goal is to do a performance review or to have a discussion on someone's performance, there are many ways to do that. But the way I'd set up the processes was here is the way to do it. So as much as everybody conformed to that, that didn't always work for every situation. And so what was happening is I had to be involved in everything. I had to be involved in every discussion. I had to be involved in every mediation. Anytime we did performance reviews, engagement surveys, everything, I was involved in that because it was my process. As opposed to really setting, here's the expectation, here's what we need to accomplish, and recognize there might be different ways to accomplish that as long as that there's agreement on what we need to accomplish. And I think that's where it really comes down to, there's certain things we just have to get done and that there's really only a few ways to get it done. But when you're not enabling the manager specifically to be a part of the process and letting them make mistakes along the way, and knowing that I'm the safety net or there's other safety nets, you're really missing the point of what HR is about. Because if I'm just saying, here's what you need to do and here's how you're going to do it, that's not allowing that manager to grow. And that stunts their career. And then also, if you think about it, HR teams aren't huge. We're not adding the revenue. We're a cost center. We're not a revenue center. So what I was not doing was viewing all the managers as assistant HR managers. And when I started in later in my career, unfortunately, it wasn't in that job, when I said, oh, I need to actually treat every manager as someone that's on my team and train them and develop them to be able to handle some of these situations, to be able to handle the difficult conversations, it actually freed up my time to become more strategic. So instead of just being transactional, I was actually able to be more of a thought partner in the organization. And what I really had to do is learn, where do I need to make sure that I'm in the conversation and in the process, and where do I need to be the safety net?
Nice. I am curious a little bit about how much sleep you were getting when you were that single-threaded HR genius. I think you set yourself up as like you were really the go-to guy.
Thank you. I think that's overstating it. But like I said, things were operating smoothly, but it was because there were hard, fast binary processes in place. So you're absolutely right. Every time something went wrong, I was called. And at that time, I thought that was success. I thought that was success that I was needed. Look how important this job is. I'm being included in everything. But what I was doing is I was missing the boat of really moving managers and leaders along and allowing them to grow in their career. And it was a huge mistake on my part at that company. Now, granted, things were operating great, but not everything has to be perfect.
Oh,
I think that's a big lesson or point that I try to make with my team now is we need to know when we have to get an A, and sometimes a B is good enough, sometimes a C is good enough. But understanding what needs to have an A and making sure that's the priority, let's focus on that. Sometimes in HR, I find that some of our employees or teams or the companies I've worked at, everything has to be an A. And that's just not physically possible with limited time, limited resources, and limited money sometimes. You have to prioritize that. And so to me, if you're only transactionally, you're going to fail at some point because you are the single point of failure. If you can start thinking about what really is the most important thing to get done, make sure that's done at that highest level. And then also developing the managers, developing the leaders to help out along the way, you're actually able to move the company forward a lot quicker.
I love that you brought that forward. So if you're just transactional, you're really single-threaded. You're the
single point of failure.
Single point of failure. And that is a lot of pressure. Although I think that having the training you did through your life, you probably got really good at transactional, getting things done and getting things done. As you were talking, I noticed you looked away. You're like, that was a big mistake. And I think something was happening for you when you were reflecting on that mistake. And I'm wondering, how did you come to realize that there was another way?
I don't know if there was a single point in time where I realized it. I had an amazing CEO at a company after that, my time in hospitality, she was really big on collaboration. And I didn't really understand what collaboration was, I think, until that point. And again, I think in the military, collaboration isn't always what's sought after because you need to have a chain of command. And it's very top down, whereas collaboration is taking a group of people, maybe at different levels of the organization, and coming together to solve something together and listening to each other's ideas. And so taking more of a collaborative approach to my work in human resources, that was probably a big turning point. I don't know if it was like a single point in time, but I did learn that I needed to focus on the development of the company and the team, specifically the managers, equally as much as process and process implementation and that transactional aspect. Because once I did that, I didn't have to be involved in every employee discussion. The managers could do that. And then I could work with the managers and ask, how did the discussion go? What were the outcomes? And that coaching aspect of that was doing three things actually. One, it was developing the manager and they were becoming better in their job and being able to manage the team better. So they were advancing in their career. It was freeing up some of my time where I wasn't the single point of failure for everything. And third, it was really helping the organization grow. in developing managers. And those managers become leaders. And those leaders are able to pass that on. So to me, it's this huge ripple effect in a positive way, as opposed to leaving a wake behind you in your work. It's the how you do things that really is important. So that was, I think it was over years that I really realized that. And now I'm at a point where, to me, it is, I'm holding the managers accountable much more than I'm holding process accountable. If you're going to be in a leadership role, if you're going to be in a manager role, I'm holding you accountable to doing your job. And part of your job is managing the team and leading the team. And I think those are two different skill sets, but it can't just be transaction with HR. We have to be helping shepherd that development along for them and getting to the point where they're actually doing that effectively.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
You named something that you're like, it helped us in three ways. Three ways. You began through collaboration, developing others, building their capability, and they were growing. Through that, you had time so that you could actually be more of focused on the how, the partnering,
yeah,
instead of just the transactional processes. And lastly, that helped the company to grow because everything
Absolutely.
Was building capability within. It's almost like a virtuous cycle instead of a vicious one.
And it's interesting. I think that in our work, it's not like a spreadsheet where everything adds up and you can actually measure the effectiveness, but you can see through engagement surveys, you can see through just conversations with employees about how managers are developing also. And I think that's really important. I believe it is our job to develop the management team and to be that partner for them, not the transactional partner, but the thought partner with them. Whereas before, there's a phrase that there's just, it's like nails on a chalkboard for me. It's, the HR policy. There are no HR policies. It's a policy for the company. It should, HR sometimes is viewed as the disciplinarian. Go see HR. That's not the way I view HR. I think we're more the guidance counselor as opposed to the principal. So we're there to help guide things along, make sure that there's processes in place, making sure that they're working, but really we're the ones enabling. We should never be the ones that are the disciplinarians or the ones that are actually taking the actions. And that was another huge transformational thought for me. Whereas before, it's like I had to be in every conversation. No, HR isn't there to be in the conversation always. We need to make sure that the right conversations are happening, the right people in the conversations. But we need to be the ones setting the expectations and then working with people when things don't go according to plan. There's always corner cases, but guidance counselor versus disciplinarian.
I really love that for a very personal reason. My child, Andrew, when he was like six, he was like, I don't know what you do all day. But then he learned a little bit. And he's like, basically, you're a guidance counselor for businesses. And I was like, yeah.
So can I say one more thing on that also? I find there's also in HR, you'll find there's the therapist HR people. And I think that is, I also don't think that's our job to be the therapist. We're there to work and guide and find solutions and solve problems. We're not there to just listen indefinitely. And I think that's another thing that, you know, I've learned along the way is you can't just spend hours upon hours listening. You have to start working towards finding some solution and recognize maybe we're not the ones to be able to find that solution and find the resources for that employee or that manager. But again, it's understanding the value of your time and how you can be that proper partner to solve those solutions as opposed to being the one to solve the solution.
I love it. I don't believe that everyone understands what being a therapist means. So tell me if you were to say, okay, this is to me what HR person as therapist looks like. Now, what does that look like? As opposed to, all right, we're the counselor that empowers. I don't know. Tell me what the distinctions are.
I think from a guide, when I say guidance counselor, for example, it's working towards a solution. And there has to be a time bound on that. That can't be indefinite. Whereas when you think about therapy, a lot of times it spans out over years and you're allowing the person to work through their problems and it's really all about them. Unfortunately, we're in a business. Most for a for-profit company, we're there, we have to help the business make money. And time is a constraint that is not indefinite in a for-profit company. So the idea is that if I was being a therapist, I would listen to the issues that are going on indefinitely and help guide towards something, but there's no time bound on that. As a counselor, we're really trying to be a partner to help find a solution as quickly and as easily as possible, because there are time impacts. We can't let issues go on indefinitely. We need to find some sort of resolution. And that's work. That's the difference between those two.
That really brings me back to something you said earlier. HR, we don't have tons of HR team members because we are a support function. You said a cost center. Absolutely. Not a revenue center. But what I just heard in that was, here's how HR can actually add value. So talk to me a little bit about that. What are some of the ways that through your transformation from, let's say, believing you had to do it all to doing it different and more effectively and through others, what are some of the ways you add value today? And how does that fill your bucket?
Well, I think it's very related. The conversation of having to do it all and not really empowering people. I believe it's really important to understand how your job affects the bottom line of the company. And being able to show that there's value added. Sometimes it's very indirect, sometimes it's more direct. When you're the single point of failure and you have to be involved in anything, that creates linear processes where you can't have things happening in parallel. So every time something happens, if there's three things that need to get done, they're done sequentially, one after the other, which takes time. Whereas if things are done in parallel, well, you have managers working on being able to handle employee conversations and work with their teams, that can be done in parallel, which is faster. But I would say that specifically from an HR perspective, we obviously need to make sure things are compliant. But outside of that, it's like, how are we making the company better? How are we enabling people? How are we enabling managers? And that really comes back to the better the environment is for employees to do their best work is hopefully going to directly relate to revenue. So sometimes that's in listening to employees from an engagement perspective and finding ways to make the company's culture, deepen the culture. Sometimes it's in ways of, hey, we have an underperforming employee. How do we find the best way to either rehabilitate the employee and get them on the right path or find another solution that is best for the company and for the employee? But there's a time constraint in all of that. And the longer an underperforming employee goes on in that role, it's a detriment to the employee because they're not feeling successful. It's a detriment to the team because they may not be pulling their own weight. It's a detriment to the company because we're not optimizing for the work output. So it's really important to find those solutions early and often to help optimize that from a revenue perspective.
So what you're doing is really accelerating towards outcomes for the business. And you do that through the managers by not just saying, do this my way, but yes. I'm your partner. Let's talk about how we do this for the greater good.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's some tools. Instead of having to have HR be the disciplinarian or giving the feedback, it's, hey, here's some tools to do this better in the future. Let me hear how the conversation went. Great. Maybe talk about this next time. And being that thought partner for them. And what I've seen is that the more that happens, those managers are developing their employees and the employees are taking on those tools and tricks as well. And same thing with the leaders. The more you work with the leadership team on that, it trickles down. And people want to emulate great leadership and great management. They take on those traits. So it really becomes something that is another jargony term, but a force multiplier for the company in being able to accelerate HR things, management, feedback, performance, engagement. It really helps move those along a lot faster.
Yeah. And the only way that you can do that with a process is by tweaking the process. But with humans have the ability to learn. So you're taking advantage of that.
Absolutely.
For empowering it. So I'm going to ask you a couple. We have so many good lessons. I'm just like, this is delicious for me. So thank you. If you were going to boil your lesson, you're let this down into two lessons from going from transactional to strategic, from being the do-it-all person to let me collaborate to help other people so we can be more effective together. What are the biggest lessons, the two biggest lessons you're taking away from those things?
Investing your managers. The more you can invest in the managers allows them to be a part of the process and be the eyes and ears and enact great employee engagement. So that's one. The second one is think of yourself as a safety net. If something goes awry, know that we're there and make sure that the team knows you're there to support them. They're not in it on their own. You have some managers that are more early in their management career and they may not feel comfortable giving feedback, and being there to support them through that is important. Same thing with a debriefing engagement survey. Some people it's old hat. they've done it before. They know they have the blind spots. They know how to do it. And you're just there to give them some coaching along the way. Others, it's brand new for them. So be that safety net, because we all started off somewhere, and being able to support the team collaboratively is just as important as setting up expectations.
Yeah, I'm hearing grow your team and have their back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We talk about safety net a lot on our team, where I say, hey, listen, I'm your safety net. Or we have another leader, hey, I'm your safety net. And the aspect that it's okay if things don't go perfect, learn from this. I always say it's an old saying, but I'd rather have somebody begging for forgiveness than begging for permission. Let me say that again. I think it's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission sometimes, specifically because you can learn from making a mistake if you have that safety net there. And the worst thing ever is to say, why didn't you do something? The best thing, I think, is to be able to say, hey, next time, let's try something different. Let's do it this way and learn from that mistake. So allowing people to make mistakes and knowing when you can make mistakes is super important, because we're not perfect. We're humans. We have flaws. We're going to make mistakes. I will make mistakes continuously, but I want to learn from those. And allowing people to do that by having a safety net is super important.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why having a safety net is important. You just went right there. So kudos to you. I'm wondering if there was anything that you personally had to let go of in this transition, anything, any limiting beliefs, anything that you had to say goodbye to so that you could step into really being a great strategic business partner.
This might be very much for me, but my ego. I think that if you have I don't think that for me at least, having a large ego is going to help you succeed in our line of work, because we're really not there for ourselves. We're really there for the employees and for the company. And not to say I had a huge ego, but really making sure that I understood why did I choose this profession? And is this the right profession for me? That was one. The other thing is I don't have to be perfect. And I think that is something that so many people struggle with, is that they feel they have to get it right every time or have 100% every time. And that's not the case. And I said this before, but knowing what you need to have done perfect is much more important than having everything done perfectly.
Those sound like good lessons for somebody just starting out. But I want to see if you have any other things that, if you were going to talk to someone that is about 15 years earlier than you and I are in our careers, what's the best advice you could give them based on the fact that you've been down this road? You've learned a couple of things along the way.
I think that there's an element of fear, especially when you're starting out in your career or earlier in your career, where you have aspirations to grow your career, where you think you have to be perfect. And it goes back to what I was just saying, but let go of your inhibitions sometimes. Understand that, try something. If it doesn't work, make sure that you have a way to understand and learn from that. Don't be afraid to try something and fail, but learn from that. You have to make sure you're learning. And I think the second thing is just a part of that is never stop learning. There's always another way to do things. There's always another way to implement a process or program. But if you think you know it all, that's when you really realize you don't know. Never stop learning.
Brilliant. So I think that these are really powerful lessons to share. And sometimes hearing them from somebody that's been there, done that, can accelerate folks down the path. I know people have gained a lot of insight from you today, Eric, and I'd love for you to share, where can they find you if they want to learn more?
I'm on LinkedIn, I think, as most of us are. And it's probably the best place to really interact with other professionals. And I'm someone that does respond to every message of somebody reaching out to me on LinkedIn. I do think it's important to give back, because so many people helped me out along the way. So I'm always willing to answer questions and give back. And that's probably the best place to find me. Other than that, I love to travel. So you never know what city I'm going to pop up in.
Oh, good. Tell me one more time, what's important to you about giving back? Because I had a ding dong.
I didn't understand how many people helped me out in so many ways throughout my career. And I think that's for everyone, but recognizing that you can't do anything on your own. And it takes a team. But to me, it's important to help others grow and learn. And I mean, and hard stop on that. And the reason why is because I care. I really want people to succeed. I want people to have a great career. And I'll give you an example. We're a medium-sized company, especially in my team. We don't have tons of opportunity for career growth. There's only a set number of people here. And if I can develop someone or our team can develop someone and they move on to a new role at another company where there wasn't the role here, that's the biggest compliment ever. And I think to me, that's the biggest thanks is seeing people progress in their career. But the more you can give back to managers, employees, people on our team, it makes a better work experience. And I'm proud of our company. I'm proud of the companies I've worked at. I think we've made a positive impact on our employees' lives. It pains me to hear stories about people being at companies where they feel that they're not valued, that there's no opportunity for growth. Nobody's taken an interest in their career. And I can't imagine what it's like to feel that. And I don't want our employees to feel that. And so that's why it's important to give back. It's important to make sure people feel valued, seen, and heard.
All right, look out. I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to be knocking on your door to work there. It seems like a great place to work. And life is too short to be in somebody else's vision of yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you so much. I really have enjoyed our conversation so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are just so much fun to chat with. And I just love the idea of you coming out of serving our country in the Navy, which is a powerful and very important thing, going into the hospitality industry and being a really great go-to guy. That was awesome. And that was important at the time. And you grew and evolved from there. You grew and evolved to show people what it was like to have a true partner, not just be the one that does it all. And that served you and it served them and it served the companies that you worked for through the years incredibly. So thanks for sharing your journey with us. And I look forward to seeing what unfolds from here because you have already helped people with your wisdom.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.